Osman Atalan arrived at Firket 2 weeks after the skirmish with the Egyptian Camel Corps. He had travelled fast, covering the distance from Omdurman in only 14 days. He was accompanied by 10 of his trusted Agajirs. Since the first word on the British advance and the commencement of the work on the railway line from Wadi Halfa, Firket had been under the command of the Emir Hamuda. Osman listened to the report of this indolent and careless man. He was appalled. "He cares only for what lies between the buttocks of his pretty boys," he told Al-Nur. "We must go forward ourselves to find the enemy and discover what they are planning." They came no closer to the village of Akasha than 5 miles before they were attacked by elements of the Camel Corps and driven off with the loss of 2 good men. They made a wide circle round the village and the next day captured 2 Bedouin coming from the direction of the village. Osman's Agajirs stripped and searched them. They found foreign cigarettes and tins of toffees with a picture of the English Queen painted on the lids. The Agajirs held down the Bedouin and sliced off the soles of their feet. Then they forced them to walk over the baking stones. This induced them to talk freely. They described the huge build-up of infidel troops and equipment at Firket. Osman realized that this was the forward base from which the main infidel attack on Firket would be launched. He circled back through the Mother of Stones towards the Nile, coming in 10 miles to the north of Akasha. He was searching for the railway line from Wadi Halfa that the Bedouin had reported. The railway had been in the forefront of his mind since Al-Yamal had described it to him. When he came upon it, it seemed innocuous. 2 silver threads lying on the burning sands. He left Al-Nur and the rest of his band on the crest of the dunes and rode down alone to inspect it. He dismounted and warily approached the shining rails. They were fastened by fish plates to heavy teak sleepers. He kicked the rail. It was solid and immovable. He knelt beside it and tried to lever out one of the iron bolts with the point of his dagger. The blade snapped in 2. He stood up and hurled away the hilt. "Accursed thing of Shaitan! This is not an honourable way to make war!" Even in his scorn and anger he became aware of a sound that trembled in the desert air, a distant susurration like the breath of a sleeping giant. Osman stood upright on Al-Buk's saddle and gazed northwards along the line of rail. He saw a tiny feather of smoke on the horizon. As he watched, it drew closer, so rapidly that he was taken by surprise, the alien shape seeming to swell before his eyes as it rushed towards him. He knew that this was the land steamer of which Al-Yamal had told him. He swung Al-Buk's head round and urged him into a gallop. He had 1/4 mile to cover before he reached the foot of the dune. The machine was coming on apace. He looked ahead to the crest of the dune and saw his Agajirs on the skyline. They had dismounted and were holding their horses, allowing them to rest. "Get down!" Osman roared as he raced across the open ground. "Let not the infidel see you!" But his men were 400 yards away, and his voice did not carry to them. They stood and watched the approaching machine with amazement. Suddenly a blast of white steam shot up from the land steamer, and it emitted a howl like a maddened jinn. Stupefied, making no effort to conceal themselves, they stood and stared at it. It was a mighty serpent with a head that hissed, howled, and shot out clouds of smoke and steam, and whose body seemed to reach back to the skyline. "They have seen you," Osman tried to warn them. "Beware! Beware!" Now they could see that the rolling trucks were stacked with steel rails and crates. On the last they made out the heads of 6 men who were crouched behind some strange contraption. "Beware!" Osman was racing up the slip face of the dune, almost at the top. His voice held a high, despairing note. Suddenly the yellow sands under the feet of the group of Agajirs and the hooves of their horse exploded into flying clouds of dust. It was as though a Khamzin had torn over them. The terrible sound of the Maxim gun followed close behind the spray of bullets. The troop of men and horse disintegrated, blown away like dead leaves. The gun traversed back towards Osman, but before the dancing pattern of bullets reached him, Al-Buk lunged over the crest. Osman swung down from the saddle. He was still stunned by the enormity and menace of the machine. But he ran to where his men lay. Most of them were dead. Only Al-Nur and Mumandigna were still on their feet. "See to the others," Osman ordered. He threw himself flat on the top of the dune and peered down the far side. He watched the long train of wagons wind away along the floor of the valley towards Akasha. In the few moments that they had been exposed to the fire of the Maxim gun, 8 of his men had been killed outright, 4 were gravely wounded and would die. 4 had survived. 5 horses were untouched. Osman destroyed the wounded animals, left a waterskin with the wounded men to ease their passing, gathered up his surviving agajiers, and rode back to Firket. Now that he had had his first glimpse of the juggernaut that was rolling down on them, he realized that his options were limited. There was little he could do to oppose and hold the enemy here at Firket. He determined to assemble and concentrate all his array on the banks of the Atbara River and strike the enemy there in overwhelming force. He replaced the depraved and ineffectual Emir Hamuda with the Emir Azrak. This man was completely different from Hamuda. He was a fanatical devotee of the Mahdi. He had carried out many daring and brutal raids on the Turk and the infidel. His name was well known in Cairo, and he could expect little mercy if he got captured. He would fight to the death. Osman gave Azrak orders to delay the enemy at Firket as long as possible, but at the last moment to fall back on the Atbara River with all his army. He left him and rode back to Omdurman. No sooner had Osman ridden away than Hamuda refused to accept that he had been replaced and engaged in a bitter dispute with Azrak, which left both men powerless. While they wrangled, the Sirdar built up his base at Akasha. Men and equipment, supplies and munitions were brought down the railway line with machine-like efficiency. Then, with 9,000 men under his personal command, Kitchener fell upon the town of Firket. The dervish were decimated, and the survivors driven out helter-skelter. Hamuda died in the first charge. Azrak escaped with less than 1,000 men and rode southwards to the confluence of the Atbara to meet Osman. With his camel corps, Kitchener followed the fleeing dervish along the riverbank and captured hundreds of men and horses and great stores of grain. Within weeks, the entire dervish province of Dongola had fallen to the Sirdar. The juggernaut resumed its deliberate and ponderous advance southwards towards the Atbara River. Month after month, and mile after weary mile, the railway line unreeled like a silken thread across the desert. On most days, the track advanced a mile or so, but on occasions up to 3 miles. The workmen encountered unexpected hardships and setbacks. Cholera broke out, and hundreds of graves were hastily dug in the empty desert. The first false flood of the inundation brought the green tide, all the sewerage that had settled on the exposed banks during the low Nile downstream. There was no other water to drink. Dysentery racked the army camps. Terrible thunderstorms poured out of a sky that usually never rained. Miles of track were washed away. Miles more were swamped under 6 feet of water. Zafir, the first of the new stern-wheel gunboats, was brought in sections from Wadi Halfa and reassembled in a makeshift boatyard at Koshesh, on the clear water section above the cataracts. Her appearance was stately and impressive, and she was launched with General Kitchener and his staff on board. As the boilers built up a full head of steam, there was an explosion like a salvo of heavy artillery as they burst. The Zafir was out of action until new boilers could be brought out from England and installed. Yet the remorseless advance continued. The dervish garrisons at Abu Hamed and Metemma were overrun and driven back on the Atbara River. Here Kitchener bombarded Osman Atalan's great defensive zareba, then smashed it wide open with bullet and bayonet. The Arabs either fled or fought to the death. The black Sudanese troops, who would fight as willingly for the infidel as they had for the dervish, were recruited into the Sirdar's army. Victory on the Atbara was decisive. Kitchener's expeditionary force went into summer quarters. He planned and mustered his powers and waited for the river to rise before the final advance on Omdurman. Penrod, who had received a spear wound through the thigh during the fighting, was granted convalescent leave. He travelled back by rail and river steamer from Aswan to Cairo.